Mary was out of bounds. She was not doing it right. Martha worked. Mary listened. And then Jesus told an annoyed Martha, and she was annoyed with good reason, that Mary had chosen the better part. Do you think that didn't anger Martha a little bit? Martha gets a bad rap. I mean, she was only doing what society expected of her. Caring for the house, getting ready for guests, preparing meals and everything. And you got to think, she was looking, Jesus, this is not fair. I'm doing all the work and Mary's sitting there listening to you. But Jesus had this other idea going on. Jesus told Martha that paying attention only to work and not attending to spiritual matters isn't the better part. But that's not the big message in the Bible reading. That's present. That's present there, but that's what gets us the, you're a real Martha. You ever heard someone say that? You're such a Martha. And they say it in a negative context, like all you do is work, 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 and you never take care of your soul, or something like that. But here's the huge message that's not even subtext. It's what's going on when Jesus says stuff like this. Martha is doing what women do according to the time. And Mary is doing what men do according to the time. Men sit at the feet of a rabbi and learn as a disciple. Women do not do that. That's exactly the context there. And so when Jesus said, look, she's sitting at my feet and learning, she's doing the right thing, he challenged, severely challenged the status quo. He embraced Mary's out-of-bounds behavior because that's what he does all through the Gospels. Martha wasn't thinking of reasons to keep Mary out of the disciple club because that just wasn't a concept. Oh, no. Women don't get to do that. She was just mad and saying, it's not fair, she's not helping me. But Jesus took it to a whole new level. He gave the readers later, he gave Mary and Martha, he gave anyone that heard this story reason to challenge the status quo that only women can do this and only men can do that. And still, we look at the Bible and we use it to define gender roles all the time. Some of my colleagues still like to do it. Even liberal colleagues who, you know, are like, yes, women can be ministers and everything, but, you know, men should do this and women should do that. And we don't need to go to, oh, who can have babies? All right, get that. I get biology. But any reason for keeping anybody out of the club, really, any club, means that there's something wrong with the status quo. Just think of all the rules that we can make that keep people out of the club. And let's take it past men and women, because maybe we are past that a little bit. Maybe we're at a point where it's all right. Women can do anything, men can do anything. Not sure if you're there or not, but both women and men, anything, anything, anything. But we still have these playground bully rules that we live by that say, you can't be in this club because you don't have the right gender, the right look. You're not the right age. Maybe you don't have the proper ability. Maybe your orientation isn't what we want. Maybe you're affiliated with the wrong clubs or the wrong political party or the wrong church. Or maybe your socioeconomic status says that you shouldn't be in this club, so we're going to keep you out. And I'm really sick of playground bully rules that define membership in any group or clique or club by any of those standards. And then we're rule makers. So we've got our playground bully club. So we've got rules that go along with that, like how things have to be done. This is the way it should be done, so therefore this is the way we're going to do it. And if you deviate from the way I think it should be done, then you're doing it wrong. When it has to be done, how should things go? Should we do that on Sundays? Maybe even worshiping on Sunday is part of that. I don't know. Sunday's a pretty good time to worship. And people ask me, when are we going to start a Saturday night worship service? I said, when I'm taking Thursday and Friday off. I mean, I have to have the sense of sanity that says that I got to take a couple days off a week just to keep my brain okay, I guess. How it should be done, when it should be done, where it should be done, where can you have church, where can you have the proper assembly for anything? When is the proper time to protest? When is the proper time to stand in the face of injustice? When is the proper time to get up and make some noise? When's the proper time to laugh? When's the proper time to cry? When's the proper time to do any of that? And our rules say that there is a proper time. And I know in, Ecclesiastes and the bird song, there is a time and a place for everything, time to be born and a time to die. But when we use Bible verses like that in order to define why you can't do something, then there's something completely wrong. You've got rule makers. Think it. Are you a rule maker? Maybe we're all rule makers a little bit. But we like to have the set of, this is the way. And please don't deviate from that. Or not always please don't deviate from that, but don't deviate from that, otherwise you will incur my wrath. Have any of you noticed that I don't play that game? I don't like that game. Don't deviate from my plan. You can deviate from my plan all you want. So we got rule makers. Then we got rule keepers. Rule keepers take the list of rules that the rule makers have made and they make sure that you follow them. I am not very good with rules. Raise your hand if you're really good with rules. Or do you want to raise your hand if you're not really good with rules? Raise your hand if you're kind of good with rules and kind of not good with rules. And it really depends on the day and what your mood is. I'm really not good with playground bully rules, but in general, if a rule tends to keep me from doing like something like showing love and kindness or forgiveness, or if I have to achieve this thing in order for that person to get that, or this person has to reach this status in order to have this reward, I don't know. Jesus is the one that took all the unlikely things and made them sort of happen, or looked at the unlikely people and said, you're worthy, you have dignity, it's okay, you and me, we're together, and it's going to work. He did that with his disciples. I've talked about this before. You know the Bible passage where it says they threw down their nets and followed Jesus, and we always like to look at that and say, oh my goodness, they threw away everything. They threw away their families, and how could they do that, and what devotion they were showing, but wow, that's something that I could never do. But really what was happening there was all these people that Jesus called his disciples were the ones who had gotten picked over by all the proper rabbis. Because that was, for a male at the time, that's what you wanted to do. If you didn't get to do that, then you went on to your other part of life, whatever job you were going to have. But if a rabbi came to you and said, be my disciple, you would go. And all the good kids had been picked by all the good rabbis. And then Jesus, scruffy Jesus, comes walking through and says, follow me. And so Peter, let's take him for example, and James and John and Andrew, even Matthew, all of them, they hear this and they're like, I've got another chance. I'm throwing down everything because this is what I have always wanted, to follow a rabbi. And somebody has picked me. But every one of them were unlikely. Jesus picked all, call it, he was picking the dregs of what the other rabbis said no to. And you are the ones that I want to teach. That's what he's saying. He picked the unlikely ones. Mary and Martha, He picked a woman to learn from him. Very, very, very unlikely. Not only unlikely, but I think unlawful at the time. Women didn't get to do that. Jesus picked whom Jesus wanted to pick. And this powerful message in all of that is Jesus calls us exactly as we are. And Jesus calls people who we don't know exactly as they are. And I don't even want to use the word they. Jesus calls all of us exactly as we are, with all of our baggage, with all of our goodness, with all of the things that we celebrate, with all of the things that we hate. As unlikely as you may think it is, that's how Jesus calls us. And now I always got to qualify because, you know, me and justice work and me and advocacy. And if as you are is saying you're not allowed to do God's work, well, then we're in conflict there, right? Jesus had a conflict there. He welcomed everyone and called everyone, but he had a favor for the ones who seemed to be cast out, for the ones who seemed to be on the side, on the edges of society, and the ones who had power, the ones who made the rules, the ones who kept the rules. He didn't have a whole lot of patience for them. He said some really nasty things to the Pharisees. I know it's translated as, "Woe to you." Let's make it a little looser in terms of how offensive it was for Jesus to say to a Pharisee, "Woe to you." He was giving them one of his fingers. Let's describe it not as the pointer, not as the ring finger, not as the pinky, not as the thumb, which I know isn't a finger when you count them. It was one other finger. That's what he was giving to the Pharisees, saying, "You know what? You don't get it, and so this is what you get from me." So he wasn't always nice. He was sick of playing by the playground bully rules, too. And Jesus' take on the people who feel like they can't do it because someone has told them that they can't, or because someone has told them that the rules don't allow them to do it, is to affirm that person. He affirmed Mary. He didn't diss Martha, but he affirmed Mary. He celebrated what Mary was doing. He encouraged what Mary was doing. He wanted Martha to cooperate with what Mary was doing. He wanted Martha to be a little more flexible in the societal roles that she had in her mind. So Jesus looks at us, and Jesus looks at the people that we think aren't good enough to do whatever it is that we don't think they're good enough to do. And Jesus says, "My way is affirmation. My way is celebration. My way is encouragement, cooperation, flexibility." And I really think that another message in here is Jesus says, "Throw out what keeps you from doing that." Because it's in affirmation and celebration and encouragement and cooperation and flexibility that we approach what Jesus' desire is for us. Yes, I just said Jesus's. It works. I know it's, I got to take a poll, you know. Jesus, plural, is Jesus. Raise your hand. Jesus, plural, is Jesus's. Raise your hand. Don't care? Is that one of the rules? I guess grammar rules are acceptable. Yeah. It's in all of those things that we approach what Jesus' desire is. And it's in the things that keep us from those important items. That's where we just get distracted. Amen.